From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A Palo Alto professor is speaking out publicly about her accusations that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her in high school. Christine Blasey Ford says that Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed, groped her, and covered her mouth with his hand to stifle her screams. Kavanaugh again flatly denied the allegations today and said, "I have never done anything like what the accuser describes to her or to anyone." A vote on the nominee is still scheduled for Thursday in the Senate Judiciary Committee, but Democrats are calling for a delay. And even White House counselor Kellyanne Conway said today she should not be insulted and she should not be ignored. Coming up on Forum, we discuss the allegations and what they mean for the Supreme Court nominee, and we want to hear from you, and that's next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, Christine Blasey Ford, a professor at Palo Alto University, publicly accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her when she was 15 years old. She says Kavanaugh, who was then 17, was stumbling drunk when he and a friend corralled her into a room and Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed and tried to remove her clothes. Kavanaugh strongly denies the accusation. Joining us to talk about the allegation and what the allegations and what they mean for the Supreme Court nomination, which is scheduled, by the way, for a vote on Thursday, is Maria Lagos, who's here with us in studio, reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. Welcome, Marisa.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Greg Storr, who joins us by phone, Supreme Court reporter with Bloomberg News. Greg Storr, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Marisa, let me begin with you. Let's just lay out what we know at this point and what we have learned, but also, well, where this is all going or where you think it's going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, last week there was percolations of this with the news that Dianne Feinstein, a senator from California, had received this letter earlier in the summer and sent it to the FBI. She said at the time that she wanted to respect the victim's wish for anonymity. And over the weekend, of course, Ms. Ford spoke out to The Washington Post, described in detail her allegations of what she calls an attempted rape. And, you know, I think politically it's really snowballed very quickly. We have seen, of course, Democrats calling for a delay to this vote. Just this morning, we have heard both the nominee and Ford say that they would testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was set to take a vote Thursday. But with folks, including Republican Jeff Flake of Arizona, saying that he doesn't think that there should be a vote until they hear from these members, and the chairman still seeming to indicate that he would prefer to do this by phone call. It seems, you know, it's very up in the air in terms of what's going to happen this week. But things do seem to be sort of changing by the moment. And it does seem that something that a week ago didn't seem likely to derail this nomination is at least appearing more likely to.
You mentioned Jeff Flake, but also Bob Corker, who, again, is not running again. And even Kellyanne Conway has weighed in here and said there should be essentially a hearing on this, and she should get her opportunity to tell her story.
I mean, it's interesting what the national papers are reporting, who are closer to the White House, is that, you know, White House advisors have advised President Trump not to weigh in, especially on Twitter, because he has his own host of allegations that have been raised against him over the years by women. And I think the words that Kellyanne Conway used this morning to talk about it, she said she should be heard. She called him a man of character integrity, but also said that she said this woman should not be insulted, nor should she be ignored. I think that that speaks to the political moment we're in. I mean, this is a very different situation than we might have seen even a couple years ago on the, you know, heels of the last 2 years of the Me Too movement and We Said Enough. And I think that the White House is walking a very delicate line, and Republicans trying to defend Kavanaugh. I mean, it's interesting. There's been a lot of what I've seen on Twitter and elsewhere is a lot of attacks on Dianne Feinstein for not bringing this forward sooner, attacks on the lawyer that Ms. Ford has hired, saying, well, she, you know, defended Bill Clinton and that, you know, she's given money to Democrats. So I think that they're treading very carefully.
And Greg Storr, how are you reading it at this point? I mean, particularly the fact that the Republicans need 50 votes. And does it seem to you like they're going to move forward and actually have a hearing on this and hear both sides?
Yeah, well, actually, we just the comment that things are changing by the minute. Just a couple minutes ago, less than 10 minutes ago, Senator Susan Collins put out a tweet saying that both Professor Ford and Judge Kavanaugh should testify under oath before the Judiciary Committee. It seems that if this nomination is going to go forward, that's what's going to have to happen. The only way that Brett Kavanaugh gets confirmed is if they both testify and he proves believable. Short of that, there are too many Republican senators who are saying, I have concerns. It seems very, very unlikely that, he could get confirmed by the Senate without appearing before the committee again and refuting the charges in a believable way.
Well, it would be, again, what they call a he said, she said, shades of Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, except mm-hmm. here's an assault that's been part of the charge. And the Republicans are going to need 50 votes one way or the other, aren't they?
Yeah, they're going to need 50 votes, and that includes two female senators who have been on the fence or who have tried to stay on the fence throughout this process, Senator Susan Collins and Senator Lisa Murkowski. Both of them are expressing hesitation at this point, along with a number of male senators. It's a small needle that the White House has to thread with this. They do want to appeal to their base. They want to select somebody. They want to push somebody off Donald Trump's list of generally very conservative nominees, but you have a couple pro-choice Republican senators who hold the swing votes, and up until now it looked like that they were going to win those two votes of Murkowski and Collins, but this certainly has the potential to derail everything.
Well, there's also, Marisa, four Democrats who voted for Neil Gorsuch who might be turning another way now, particularly Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, who, again, a woman and would sympathize with this, presumably, to a greater degree.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen, to the point of things changing within the hour, folks like Senator Joe Donnelly, who is considered a swing vote, bringing up the idea that this is super serious and it needs to be addressed. I think I just saw, a New Yorker writer tweet to note that there is not a single Republican woman on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I think that that speaks to, this moment for them and how tough it's going to be. I mean, there was a sense that, they could get some of these moderate Democrats potentially, and especially ones in red states, Joe Manchin, others who were worried about what would happen in the election. But it seems like, and again, it's early and in this media environment, things change so quickly. But it seems like the narrative is flipping a little bit. And what you have is, Republicans maybe in more purple states saying this could go, come back on us, especially if it does not. The optics are going to be very important, obviously. And that's not to say that this, the substance of it isn't incredibly important. But I think when you talk about the Anita Hill hearings and what happened in their wake in 1992, if they both come and testify publicly this week, the way that the committee approaches it is going to be eminently important from a political perspective.
Well, what about that Judiciary Committee, Griffithor? I mean, there are 11 on it, and they're bitterly divided, of course, but the Republicans can actually bring this directly to the Senate floor, and even Chuck Grassley has suggested that they need more information.
Yeah, they could bring it directly to the Senate floor, but they don't have the votes right now. It's going to have to go through the committee, and it's going to have to. It's pretty very clear at this point that Professor Ford's allegations are going to have to be looked at and weighed and taken very seriously. There's really no way around that, and potentially that means we're dragging this nomination process out until we get much closer to the November election, and the closer we get to that, the more the political calculations start to change.
Would this change anything in terms of what the Democrats were trying to get in the way of release of documents, particularly when Brett Kavanaugh served in the Bush administration?
That's an interesting question. That's certainly a possibility. It hasn't been the focus right now, but there may be renewed focus on his record on connected issues involving sexual harassment, sexual misconduct. There's some emails that have not necessarily written by him, but emails that had some inappropriate language in them. There might be renewed scrutiny of that. Right now, though, I think the focus is going to be on these particular allegations, whether there's any additional corroboration that comes forward, what Professor Ford sounds like when we actually get to hear from her, directly if she sounds credible, and of course whether there's anything else lurking out there that we don't yet know about, any other allegations, because it's so often the case that somebody who has engaged in sexual misconduct doesn't do it just once; they do it more than once, and so certainly don't want to accuse him of any additional wrongdoing. But it's possible that there will be other women who come forward.
So, what do you think, Greg? I mean, Mitch McConnell had planned on getting this moved forward before the October 1st convening of the Supreme Court. Looks unlikely. Pretty unlikely at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah, that looks really unlikely. Here's the thing that Brett Kavanaugh may have going for him with the Republican Party. If they pull his nomination, given the fact that we have an election coming up, it is possible that the Senate shifts to Democratic hands. The latest polls have shown that's possible, but perhaps not likely. There is a real danger for Republicans that if they pull the Brett Kavanaugh nomination, that Donald Trump cannot get another person confirmed with the Republicans still in control of the Senate. A lot of factors there. Who knows how that's going to play out? But that might be a reason why they want to stand behind him, because he is the best chance Republicans have right now to getting another conservative vote on the Supreme Court.
Well, presumably, if it fails, they just go to the next name on the Federalist list. But
probably isn't enough time for that.
Marcia, I want to ask you about something else, though, because you mentioned Senator Feinstein and all this. If the Republicans are creating a narrative here that she sat on it for months, which she did, and there are vague memories that came out of this Professor Ford testimony, or that will come out, that have already come out, even though she passed a polygraph and she has some corroborating witnesses to an extent with her husband and with a psychiatrist whom she talked about in the story, but then he has the guy that he was drunk with, who says nothing like that ever happened, the guy that he was allegedly drunk with. Why didn't Senator Feinstein, bring this up earlier in the process, in the confirmation process?
Well, I got to say, last week I was kind of scratching my head asking the same question. But as more information came out over the weekend and we heard directly from Ms. Ford and from her attorney, I think it became clear that Dianne Feinstein was respecting the wishes of this alleged victim. And she had said, I do not want this to be public. It's interesting, we've seen her opponent in the Senate race, Dianne Feinstein's opponent, Kevin DeLeon, jump on that, sort of similarly to the way Republicans are attacking Dianne Feinstein. But I think that
she could have brought it up in private meetings, for example, couldn't she?
I suppose, but I think when you talk about sexual assault allegations and when you talk about the idea of respecting a victim's wishes, I think that she was doing what she thought was right. In one of the stories over the weekend, I read that, her staff repeatedly reached out to Ms. Ford and her attorney over the last months to ask if she had changed her mind. And so I think that they were really trying to walk a middle ground here. I mean, it is interesting that they did not bring it forward even privately. But I think that, as somebody who's probably dealt with these types of sensitive situations before, Senator Feinstein was trying to be really careful. And I mean, I guess the only thing I would say is that it is even, given what I'm saying about her respecting her wishes, the narrative that Brett Kavanaugh and Republicans on the committee really tried to put forward during the nomination hearings and the direct interviews with him was one of, very much lifting up women, of respecting women. He talked extensively about all of the female clerks that he had hired and how, sort of trying to change the gap within the judicial system of females being clerks and how that can lead, obviously, to, judgeships and being a more successful lawyer. That was really, a narrative that they tried to craft. And I think that to your point about the documents and will we get more information, I doubt it. But I think that this does sort of play into the narrative that Democrats were trying to put forward, which is that, they've essentially, we've seen people accuse him of perjury, saying that he lied about those leaked documents that had been stolen, 10, 12 years ago by Republican staffers, that there was questions about whether he was truthful about some of the programs he was actually involved in when he was a White House lawyer for George W. Bush. And so I do think that, from that perspective, it could come up within the questioning, at least.
And in fact, Senator Whitehouse brought up some charges about possible gambling that was serious that weren't brought up in the confirmation process. You wonder why.
That's right,
And Senator Harris brought up some things about maybe talking to the Trump law firm.
Although that seems to end with
that.
That
kind of got lost
in
the shuffle as well. Let me go back to Greg Storrs, Supreme Court reporter for the Bloomberg News. The FBI is involved in this now, Greg. What's their role?
Well, the Senator Feinstein sent the letter that she received to the FBI, not for investigative purposes, because the events happened well beyond the statute of limitations, but for the purpose of background vetting. And there's no indication that the FBI, at least that I have seen, unless there's something new this morning that I have not seen, no indication that the FBI is spending any resources looking into the veracity of the allegations. They put it in the file. It's there. It appears that the truth of these allegations is going to happen more in the court of public opinion and publicly rather than through an FBI investigation.
Greg Storgan, a Supreme Court reporter with Bloomberg News. Greg, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Always good to be on. Thanks.
And we're going to continue with Marisa Lagos, reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. And I'm going to bring Democratic Congresswoman Anna Eshoo aboard here. She represents Silicon Valley in a moment. We'll get to her. And this all sort of began with, in fact, Marisa might outline, for before it went to Dianne Feinstein, it went to Anna Eshoo.
That's right. Ms. Ford sent this letter, apparently, to Anna Eshoo first. And, you know, I think that I think it's been a hard thing in some ways. I'm sure as a representative, you know, in Congress who is not voting on this nomination, to sort of watch this whole thing unfold and not, you know, have a seat at the table, as it were, in these judiciary hearings. But Eshoo is Ms. Ford's congresswoman, and I think that that's why she reached out to her. And again, you know, we've sort of seen this story change so quickly over the last week that I'll be interested to hear what the congresswoman has to say about that.
Does this have any reflection on all the charges which have been made against the president of the United States, including the infamous tape where he talked about grabbing women and
Hollywood,
the like.
Yeah, the Hollywood Access tape. I mean, I think that that is why we've seen Kellyanne Conway, for example, be put out there as the person responding to this, a woman who is very careful, as I said, not to attack the accuser. I think that this is why we have seen the president only tweeting about the hurricane and about tariffs this morning, because, you know, I think he's been advised not to talk about it. And I think that it runs a real political risk for the GOP in a year where we have so many women running, where we have, I think, again, coming on the tails of this Me Too movement that really rocked so many different disparate industries, from Hollywood to politics to the media, state houses. You know, I think that they are looking at this and having to really make some tough decisions about how to talk about this, how to defend Kavanaugh. And these are the kinds of things that, regardless of what happens with his nomination, I think will truly trickle down to some of these congressional races where you have women, a sort of unprecedented number of women challenging male incumbents and just running for office in general. And I think that when you talk about, you know, sexual assault allegations, that is something that does not always cut down party lines, obviously. And so it is a sticky spot for the president and his administration.
And they will both be presumably under oath, so there will be the possibility of consequences there?
Yeah, I mean, assuming that this happens, as I said, we haven't heard complete confirmation that Senator Grassley, the chairman, is going to allow them to testify, but it seems like with both sides agreeing to and the sort of drumbeat from Democrats and others that's increasingly likely. I think, again, you know, this was supposed to go for a vote on Thursday, so will they be able to get things together and even have more testimony this week? I'm not sure how quickly they can turn that around.
Well, in fact, I talked about McConnell, Mitch McConnell planning to get this through and push it through by October 1st when the Supreme Court convenes. But Lindsey Graham said the committee should heard from her, didn't he not?
Yeah. You know, Graham has been a little bit less strident than some of the others on that. But I think that we're hearing sort of, again, this drumbeat and more people are realizing that if nothing else, they need to give her the opportunity to speak. Of course, again, that raises the question, what will the sort of vibe be in the committee when that happens? How will they treat her? You know, the previous hearings were very much along party lines, sort of questioning with Democrats really going for the jugular and trying to pin Kavanaugh down, and a lot of very softball-y questions from Republicans who wanted to sort of pump up his credentials and talk about the things I mentioned before, you know, which again now is interesting, this idea that he's been a huge friend to women and that has been a big part of his sort of integrity. I mean, that's something you heard a lot during those hearings, was there's no question about, you know, his experience or integrity, and now we obviously have a big question mark.
He also has about 65 women women who he knew in high school who have signed a statement saying we have no question about his integrity and he's a good guy and all that.
Right. And so I think that even before any of these allegations, you saw that trotted out. I mean, not just the women from high school, which kind of came out in the last week, I think, but also a series of women from sort of across the political spectrum who had worked with him in the D.C. circuit and who vouched for him. I'm seeing now on Twitter the Judicial Crisis Network, which, of course, has backed him with a lot of money and ads, is saying that they're going to buy a big ad campaign to continue to prop him up and to support his nomination. So this is clearly the battle lines are not changing other than, it seems, within the Senate.
Let's hear from you, our listeners. If you've just joined us, we're talking, obviously, about the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and recent events that may stall that nomination and may have it go through a whole series of different kind of hurdles, shall we say. And we do welcome your involvement in the program. And let me tell you how you can become involved. You can join us at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so please feel free to be part of the program. Again, 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, and we do welcome your emails, forum@kqed.org. is our email address, or go to our website and post questions or comments you might have or thoughts you might want to share on our website at kqed.org/forum and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And, of course, you can join us also by going to our Facebook page. When you've got two Republicans, Marisa, like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, you have to realize the fact that they don't have to stand for re-election either.
Right. And I think that this is a really interesting moment for them because both Flake and Corker clearly have been unhappy with some of President Trump's actions and the way he's dealt with things and I would say some of his policies, too. But it seems in some ways a lot more of it is style than substance that they were offended by. But we've also seen them sort of back away from harsh criticisms in many, many cases. And I think that this is a real moment here where, you know, as you said, the makeup of that committee is 11 to 10. Only one Republican needs to fall off to hold up this nomination from being sent to the floor. And so even just, you know, the prospect of those two senators, you know, calling for this. I mean, as you said, we have seen more and more Republicans say, yes, we need to hear from both sides, I think especially since Judge Kavanaugh said he would be willing to come back. But the fact that they came up first is meaningful. And as you said, I mean, they don't have the same sort of political considerations as the rest of the committee, which in itself is sort of interesting because, as I said, I think that there's a real risk here for Republicans running for re-election who may not want to look, you know, be characterized as treating a female potential victim a certain way. And so the fact that those are the two that stood up, I think, speaks to, you know, how much Republicans in Washington have really stood by President Trump.
Reading a comment from a listener named Edith who says, what lesson is the GOP telling adolescent boys when they deny the attempted sexual molestation of the 17-year-old victim, Dr. Ford, as a teenager? They are saying we don't care what he did as a teen, that he can lie about it and get away with it. Anita Hill was not believed and humiliated by Clarence Thomas, and the GOP senators in her hearings and Thomas were put on the Supreme Court. Kavanaugh must be withdrawn as a candidate. We're getting that kind of opinion, obviously, and we'll hear more of your opinions. We'll also hear from Anna Eshoo, who represents Silicon Valley, who reportedly received a letter months ago from Professor Ford, which was later passed on to Senator Feinstein in July. Feel free again to join us, and we'll hear from you, as well as Anna Eshoo, and Ken Rudin will be joining us after the break as well, Public Radio's political junkie, former political editor at NPR. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the ongoing drama of the Kavanaugh nomination and the charges that are moving forward on that by actually a woman here in the Bay Area. And we want to talk about it specifically and how it began with Democratic Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, who, again, represents Silicon Valley and reportedly received a letter months ago from Christine Blasey Ford, which was, as I said, passed on later to Senator Feinstein in July. And Anna Eshoo, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. And this, when you received this letter, and she is in your district, what was your first response? And you were told that she wanted it to be confidential, or she certainly wanted it to be anonymous, right?
Well, Dr. Ford is my constituent. She contacted my office. We certainly followed up with her, and I met with her for an extended period of time in July. I thought that it was important to listen very well to her story, what she wanted to share with me, and she did. It was also important for me to emphasize to her that she tell me what she wished me to do with it, or that she was simply confiding in me and wanted to know the story of what had taken place earlier in her life. Privacy is so essential for individuals that have undergone or been subjected to any kind of sexual assault. And so she was the one that made the decision that she wanted this to move in a pathway that was that she thought would be helpful. And so I contacted Senator Feinstein because she is her, Dr. Ford is her constituent as well. And Senator Feinstein is also, as you know, the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And so she wrote a letter. We made sure that it was hand-delivered to Senator Feinstein's office, and then it was in Senator Feinstein's hands.
At this point, of course, we're talking about allegations that happened a long time ago. Let me ask you just bluntly, did you find her completely credible?
I did. She told her story very carefully. It was more than obvious to me that this had an impact on her life, and that's why I think that it is a tremendous act of courage that she would decide to go public with this. She understood all along that that there would be consequences if she did go public. It would upend her her privacy, the privacy of her family, she was obviously willing to risk these factors to present the truth.
Part of the Republican narrative is that she is a Democrat and has given money to Democratic candidates, perhaps even to you or Senator Feinstein, I don't know, but at least that's on the record. And I wonder what you say to that kind of narrative, that this is partisan or that it has partisan qualities to it.
Well, I've never met this constituent before, but what I would say about that is that sexual assault is, it's not Republican and it's not Democrat. This is so offensive. It damages the individual emotionally. There's tremendous fear that surrounds going public with it. We certainly kept all privacy and confidentiality around the case. She was the one that made the choice. And she spoke about her, I know publicly, that her role as citizen in weighing the risks of coming out publicly were very important to her. Mm-hmm. Because this is one of the most consequential decisions that is made in our country, an appointment to the Supreme Court. I have no doubt that that sexual assault victims carry a lifetime of damage, I would say, emotionally. But this is also a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. So this is not anything that's partisan to me. But as you mention it, it is a legitimate fear for someone crossing from privacy into the public square to bring forward what she suffered.
And Eshoo, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Democratic Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, who again represents Silicon Valley and reportedly received a letter months ago from Christine Blasey Ford. I want to go to Ken Rudin, who's Public Radio's political junkie, former political editor of NPR. Ken, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how do you see this at least proceeding at this point? I know that there are no tea leaves that you have any more than the rest of us, but there are, as we've noted, Republicans who aren't running for re-election, and women Republicans who seem to be wanting this to move forward in some way that's judicious. What do you see happening, unfurling here?
Well, who knows? I mean, we know on the schedule that the Senate Judiciary Committee is basically scheduled to vote on the nomination on Thursday. We're talking about 3 days from now. And yet there at least seems to be three Republicans, not the Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski's that we expected to have the objections, but people like Jeff Flake, who, of course, often talks a tough line against the Trump administration, but then ultimately votes for the nominees. But Jeff Flake, Arizona, who is leaving the Senate, Bob Corker of Tennessee, who's also leaving, both have said that maybe there should be a pause in the nomination, pause in the vote until we hear more. Now, Chuck Grassley, of course, as you well remember, all the rush he had and how much time he gave to Merrick Garland's nomination in 2016. I'm sorry I keep bringing that up, but I keep thinking about the contrast between what happened to Garland in 2016 and the seeming rush on Kavanaugh in 2018. But the fact is that Flake and Corker and even Lindsey Graham have said, let's hold off. And even Chuck Grassley, though, said, okay, well, maybe we'll hear from Ms. Ford. Maybe we'll hear from Judge Kavanaugh. But I still see no reason why we should delay the nomination, at least the vote on the nomination in the committee, beyond Thursday.
Well, we should mention that we just got news that Chuck Grassley put out a statement, and he says he continues working to set up, quote, follow-up calls with relevant parties. That's the end of quote, excuse me. But he says the Democrats refuse to join him in that effort, and I'm quoting him now. I will continue working on a way to hear Professor Ford out in appropriate and precedented and respectful manner. We're going to go to our calls now, and by the way, if you've just joined us, Ken Rudin is now on the line with us, Public Radio's political junkie and former political editor at National Public Radio. And let's begin with caller Amy. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I just wanted to weigh in as a mother of two teenage daughters and a teenage son, and just the continual examples that are being put out as leadership of men, including our president, who have harassed or allegedly harassed women, and how it just seems to be rampant. And I am sickened, actually, that there's even a question of whether we ought to pause to give more room to hear her story and really consider what are we putting forward as leadership in our country.
Well, I thank you for that call, Amy, and I'm going to go back to Marisa Lagos. I presume that call probably speaks for many women who feel the same way, especially mothers of young daughters.
And teenage sons and everyone. I mean, I think it does, and I think that that's one thing we've seen over the last 2 years. I mean, even if you set this situation aside, just how prevalent sexual assault and abuse is for women in this nation, and how much, you know, we hear so much, you know, these questions about credibility and why would she do this now, this 11th hour? I mean, if you read through her interview with The Washington Post, she lays out very clearly what Congresswoman Eshoo said, which is she thought very long and hard about it and initially decided there was not a reason to do this because she knew that it would essentially ruin her life and her family's lives, and that she felt like this nomination was going to go through anyway, so what was the point? And I think that regardless of whether you support Judge Kavanaugh or not, like, that should give people a pause to think about what benefit would she get from this other than to put herself out there in a forum where she is already being attacked and questioned.
Well, the Republicans have already mentioned that she gave donations to the Democratic Party. I mean,
very minor. And then, like I said, I mean, I think that was an interesting thing to me as I sort of went this morning to see what is the narrative, even, you know, among folks who maybe can be a little bit more rabid in support of Trump, and they are going after her lawyer. I mean, that is the narrative that
it's Deborah Katz,
who's a Washington attorney, yeah, who did, you know, did speak out at some point in favor of Bill Clinton's side of the Paula Jones case, who obviously does have Democratic connections, but, you know, is a lawyer with experience in sexual harassment. And that ostensibly seems to be why the professor called her. And so,
what are they saying about Deborah Katz?
They're retweeting quotes she made in the 90s, sort of defending Bill Clinton, talking about the law and whether Paula Jones had a case. And then they're talking about her sort of connections to Democrats. Of course, we should say Judge Kavanaugh had a part in that whole investigation as well.
That's
he
right.
was part of the Kenneth Starr investigation.
A lot of documents which we can't get access to, in fact, and all that. Let me get another caller on here, and that's Mark. Mark, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you. I have a couple of observations why I think this is remarkably explosive. This comes in the wake of Judge Aaron Persky being unseated as international news. Not because he sexually assaulted anybody, but because simply he exercised his discretion in handing down a sentence. This individual is accused of the actual sexual assault. And I just see this as a category difference between, of course, the times as well, between what we have now and what we had during the Anita Hill hearings. I'm curious what your callers think.
Yeah, Ken Rudin, what about that analogy? I said before that the difference, it's a he said, she said, in effect, like it was with Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, but there was no sexual assault in that case. What do you see in terms of parallels here, or non-parallels?
Well, I mean, of course there are a lot of parallels in the fact that certainly in 1991, after Anita Hill testified, that damaging testimony, after we thought that the Senate Judiciary had its say about Clarence Thomas, but even though she had her testimony, a lot of people believed her, many people believed her, the Senate, and even this was a Democratic Senate at the time, it still voted to confirm Clarence Thomas, I think it was 52-48, very narrow, but he's still on the Supreme Court. It also led politically to a lot of angry women coming to the polls in 1992. And of course, that was the so-called and perhaps poorly named a year of the woman, but the fact that women were engaged and outraged. One parallel I see now is that you have, and I think Amy was one of the caller who called before, said we have a president of the United States who has been accused of a sexual assault by at least a dozen women. A lot of his defenders will say that it's just, you know, it never happened. I thought it was very interesting to hear Kellyanne Conway this morning on Fox and Friends saying that, look, you know, Christine Ford deserves a hearing. She should not be dismissed. She should not be dragged through the mud. Now, of course, we could talk about the motivation for what Kellyanne Conway and the reasoning for what Kellyanne Conway is arguing. But I think she's arguing a smart move. Let her have her say, and then ultimately the Senate will vote to confirm or not confirm. And right now, you know, I'm just wondering that once upon a time, all we talked about was Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, that maybe Brett Kavanaugh would jeopardize the Roe decision and women's access to abortion, and it was just about Collins and Murkowski. But sexual assault is different, and we seem to, even though there are parallels to Bill Clinton and going back to Anita Hill, to Paula Jones and other things.
And Juanita Broderick. I mean, there was a rape charge against Bill Clinton.
There were scores and what happened with Monica Lewinsky. The fact is that Me Too is not just a slogan. It's the fact that sexual assault, which was never acceptable, nor should it ever been acceptable or normalized, people are finally saying enough is enough. And we saw it in entertainment, we've seen it in business, and we've certainly seen it in politics with maybe up to 9 members of Congress, Democrats and Republican, either losing their seats, leaving their seats, or deciding not to run again because what they've been accused of is just so abhorrent. So this is a different time, and I just wonder if maybe this conversation does move beyond Collins and Murkowski, and maybe it does move to the Jeff Flakes and the Lindsey Grahams and the Bob Corkers, who always have been accused of, while talking a strong game against Trump and company, never come through. And I just wonder if the prospects for confirmation have changed. I mean, look, we're only in day two of this, knowing this story, and you know the possibility of other things coming forward, other people coming forward, and we'll see what both Ford and Kavanaugh say, perhaps under oath, but it just feels different than it did 3 days ago.
Well, I'm looking at a question from a listener, Wanda, who says, is it possible that the accusations against the judge might be set aside by the committee as boyish indiscretion? Had these accusations been legal charges against him as a minor, they could be expunged from his record.
I absolutely think that if we see them testify and there is a sense from Republicans that, you know, she was not credible or that he did well, that they might make that argument that this was 35 years old, that, you know, I mean, look, this is going
statute to statute limitations.
Well, and more than that, like, I think that this is gets at the real challenge of a lot of these types of allegations, which is it is a he said, she said. I mean, there was one witness, alleged witness to this alleged assault, and he has slightly changed his story over the weekend, saying he didn't remember and then denying it. But bottom line is he's a friend of Judge Kavanaugh's, right?
He's also someone who has written a book about having alcoholism, and he's a filmmaker named Mark Judge.
It'll be interesting to see whether he is called to testify as well. But I think that, you know, it's hard to, again, predict the future in any way, shape or form. And I think it will depend on, you know, what else comes up in the coming days and again, whether this testimony even happens. But I do think that that's a chance. And like I said, I mean, we're seeing a lot of the key players who have supported this nomination really rally behind him. And so what will that mean for Republicans? I don't know.
Let me bring another caller on. And Holly, that's you. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I was comment about Dr. Ford, by the way.
Holly, you're breaking up, I'm sorry to say. I'm going to have to try to get a better line there, but let me get another caller on in the meantime, and we'll go next to Horatio. Good morning.
Hi. I'm calling about the... just the sheer lack of civility that we have right now in the process of nominating and bringing forth candidates. I think we're at a very unprecedented level. The analyst was talking about Merrick Garland was apologized for it. No, that's not the way we should be thinking about this. Absolutely, that is the last precedent of the Democratic Party bringing forth candidate. This level of rushing through the process is a severe form of uncivility. It's important to bring up the issues of sexual assault that we're talking about right now, but it's important to connect this to all the things that we don't know about this Kavanaugh right now candidacy. And we're talking about immigration. We're talking about basic civil liberties. I, as a person of color, do not see this going any positive direction for somebody like me in the future. People like me being stuck in situations that they shouldn't be at all with regard to the law. This is a very dirty endeavor that's being taken with this, the way the nomination is being handled, and we need to be able to take this to the next level.
All right. I thank you for that call and appreciate your calling in. I'm just wondering, though, and let me go back to Ken Rudin on this. How much does the Merrick Garland nomination weigh over this whole process in your judgment, Ken?
I think it weighs a lot with Democrats because just like the Republicans always felt that Robert Bork was treated unfairly in 1987, the Democrats certainly have a case for the way that Merrick Garland was treated or not even treated in 2016. No vote, not even a hearing. And I think that weighs on a lot of people. But I also, in mentioning Robert Bork, it also reminds me, and it was interesting what Horatio was talking about, but where Robert Bork learned to his dismay was that he came forward. He was very upfront about his views and how he felt about women's reproductive rights and almost everything else. And the Senate said, oh, thank you very much, and we're not going to vote to confirm you. And I think judicial nominees for the Supreme Court in the years since then, Democrats and Republicans, have been very reticent and almost closed-mouthed about what they believe in. So maybe Horatio either feels that there should be more than just sexual harassment questions about Judge Kavanaugh, but we learned through the three or four days of testimony during the Judiciary Committee that his memory is faulty, his veracity is in question. It's not only about, you know, Christine Ford, it's about almost everything else in his life, about his years with Kenneth Starr, his years with George W. Bush. So it almost seems like this is an exercise of futility, this confirmation hearing, because at least we've seen at least with a little bit with Neil Gorsuch last year and certainly with Kavanaugh this year, is that the Republicans just want the obligatory hearings to go through, rush the vote through, and certainly have a vote while the Republicans still have control of the Senate.
There's recognizably also something that President Trump said about we could, when you go back to Bork, as you just did, Ken, you can see this going back and forth with whomever is in control of the Congress, with every Supreme Court nomination just having these kind of battles. You're listening to Forum. We're talking to KQED's Marisa Lagos and Public Radio's political junkie Ken Rudin, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. We spoke earlier with Greg Storr, a Supreme Court reporter with Bloomberg News, and with Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, I should mention, who is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing California's 18th Congressional District. And we're going to continue and take more of your calls. I want to not only remind you, though, that this is a fundraising period, but that for more information about how to support KQED, you simply need to go to kqed.org. And I hope you will. And we are going to go to more calls here forthwith. Let me just read a quick comment from a listener. Tina says, men forget what they did and who they assaulted. Women never do. I never have. If me too means anything, Kavanaugh must not be confirmed. I'm Michael Krasny. And let's go to another caller. We go to Judy next. Judy, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to take issue with something that you said earlier, where the committee in 1991 confirmed when it had to for the vote, and even Democrats, as you said. And that committee, if you recall, was all white men and mostly, you know, well above middle age. And they were completely baffled by what sexual harassment meant. They did not know. Their faces showed they didn't know and that they didn't believe it.
Well, if you're talking about what happened in the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas, even people like former Vice President Joe Biden has apologized publicly for really being too hard on Anita Hill and everything. It stacks up differently, though, now, I think it's safe to say, doesn't it, Marisa Lagos?
Yeah, and I think that's the point the caller is making, that, you know, when you have a committee made up of all men, I mean, again, it is sort of crazy that in 2018 we have on the Republican side all men, but that this is a very different moment. And I think that's sort of what myself and others were alluding to when we talk about this effort to smear Deborah Katz, the attorney, as tying her to the Bill Clinton allegations, which I think many women remain horrified by on all sides of the political aisle. That this is not 1992 or 94, that this is a different moment, and that we have as a society more acknowledgement of this problem. Clearly, we have not solved it in any way, shape, or form, but that it is not acceptable, even the way it would have been a couple years ago, to go after her in the same way. And maybe that's a small solace, but it is at least something, I think, as a woman to say, look, we are in a new moment, and I think that women are not shy about speaking out. And I want to say it again. I mean, we have so many women running for office on all sides of the political spectrum right now, and I think that this can become an issue that goes well beyond the Kavanaugh hearings.
And I'm going to read a comment from a listener named Tracy, who says, I'm a parent of a 17-year-old high school boy. We have had ongoing conversations about high school actions and their long-term effects. We agree that while growth and forgiveness should be part of the equation, a man who did these things and lied about it and could be ruling on many topics that include women, including abortion, should not and does not deserve to become a Supreme Court justice.
Well, you know, we had Michelle Dabber, who was the one who led that recall effort against Judge Persky in the South Bay, who gave a very perceived lenient sentence to a man who assaulted a woman and was recalled. And she brought up the fact that if these allegations are upheld or found true, that it could actually sort of prove risk to his current judicial appointment, that this isn't just about his Supreme Court nomination, but the court he sits on now, which may be a little further than, I mean, who knows? Who knows?
Well, it may be relevant to also realize that both of these incidents, the one that was brought up about Judge Persky and the one involving Kavanaugh, are fueled by alcohol, and I mean, it played a very important role. David says, what relevance is the time that Christine Blasley shared her story? If the story is true, it is true today as it was when it occurred. And let me get another caller aboard here, and that's you. Pat, you're on the air. Morning.
Yes, I'd like to remind you that 90% of the papers that normally would have been available to the committee were withheld, and that those that were available were viewed by a friend of Judge Kavanaugh as opposed to the group that normally does review the papers but couldn't do it until, I believe, the 30th. Consequently, they went ahead because they need to rush.
Yeah, I thank you for that reminder, Pat. And again, I go to you on this, Ken Rudin. How much we were talking about anger of the Democrats is tied to the fact that those papers were not available, the papers that were related to the work that the judge did when he was working with the Bush administration.
Michael, I am loving and yet sad about all these phone calls coming in because they are right on target. And when I heard Judy talking about certainly boys, the fact that once upon a time sexual assault was dismissed as, well, you know, boys being boys, nothing is acceptable like that. It should never have been acceptable. And what Pat is exactly right, the fact is the night before the hearing started, 46,000 pages of material were dumped on the committee with giving Democrats absolutely no time to look at it, inspect it, plus the fact that hundreds of thousands of pages were withheld by the Trump administration. So for all the objections that Democrats had about Kavanaugh's memory and veracity and things like that, the fact is they didn't even get their hands on so much material because it was deemed inappropriate or confidential or in the public interest, not in the public interest, to be revealed. So for all the stories of Christine Forge, how many – look, this is not fair to Kavanaugh to say what I'm about to say, but we don't know what was in his past because those papers were not released, and that is a legitimate Democratic complaint.
We will leave it there, Ken Rudin. Good to have you with us. Appreciate your being
with us. Thank you,
Michael. And Marisa Lagos, always good to hear from you. Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
We also had Greg Storr with us from Bloomberg News and Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, and we have another hour of reform. We're going to begin our election coverage, or continue it, I should say. It's going to get hot and heated because we're getting closer to November. We're going to talk about Proposition 5, a property tax break. We'll be joined by a pro and a con, and Scott Schaefer will sort of set the tone for us. Stay tuned.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.